Welcome to the Philip Wiley Show. Take a look behind the curtain of professional hacking and hear compelling discussions with guests from diverse backgrounds who share a common curiosity and passion for challenges and their job. And now, here's your host, offensive security professional, educator, mentor, and author, Philip Wiley.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Philip Wiley Show. Today, I'm very excited to have Michael Kim joining. Michael Kim and I have been connected on LinkedIn for a while. I'm not really sure how long, but I've kind of followed his career. And a while back, he just recently, I think, celebrated a new job, I believe. And so I just been thinking for a while that I needed to get Michael on the show. He's got a really extensive background in offensive security, from red teaming, penetration testing. He's worked for different types of organizations. And so I think he's got a very unique perspective. And before the show, we had a chance to kind of talk. This is the first time we're actually speaking in person. So I really look forward to the episode, and thanks for joining.
Yeah, well, thank you for the opportunity. It's definitely an honor. And like I really hope that whatever we talk about and we cover, I definitely hope that it can influence other people, motivate other people, and have this leave. That's like a good feeling for people.
Very good. I think they will. And just kind of as we're talking, you're one of these folks that I would gravitate towards, is those that really like to pay back and help others. So I am sure that people will get a lot of good out of this episode. So why don't you, like I refer to as folks as sharing their origin story, a hacker origin story, if you wouldn't mind sharing kind of how you started out and where you kind of are these days.
Absolutely. So just to, I guess, before I delve in, just let you know, I have a very, I guess, it's a very chaotic background, I would say. So I used to work in music for a very long time. Like, music was my passion. I would produce music, I would DJ, like, that was what really made me feel alive. And before that, like, I was trying to go for veterinary school and everything. But there's nothing really clicked with me, and music was always something that I always really just gravitated back to. So I was doing that for, I guess, 10 to 15 years. So that was kind of my full-time job. I can tell you my parents were not happy. They did not consider that a job. They considered that more a hobby. So every time I'd meet them, I would come visit them in Korea, and they would always ask me, when are you getting a new job? When are you getting a real job? Like, when are you stop? Like, when are you going to stop doing music and, like, focus on real life? And I would always just talk back to them, like, this is my job. Like, I'm not going to change. So it was just basically most of my life. And then I was visiting my family right before the pandemic. And I was supposed to come back after years staying with my family, grew up. And that's when the first cases of the pandemic happened in the U.S. So my parents were like, oh, you should stay. It should be a little bit better in a couple months, and you can go back. And it's like, yeah, I really don't have any choice. Maybe it might be better to stay with family. So I did that, and it ended up being a couple of years. So during that time, I was thinking about my future and, like, you know, music and everything. And I don't know. I feel like definitely felt like my parents definitely influenced me a lot in thinking about my future other than music. And I was kind of curious about, I know, pen testing and hacking. Always thought it was amazing, but I always also thought that you needed a degree to get into it. So for me, like, do I really want to go back to school another 4 years, another 3-4 years, spend all that money and then get a degree and then start over again? And I was like, I don't want to do that. But then the more research I did, I found out that there were different types of, like, platforms like boot camps or different type of resources they could use to get into the field. So I decided to take a leap, join the boot camp. And I think that was like the pivotal moment in my life, which changed everything. Like, I really learned what the field of cybersecurity was. I met people that I'm still talking to on, like, Discord, on LinkedIn. I have, like, really good friends, and we meet each other and talk to each other. They're all working in different fields of cybersecurity, and there's a lot of people who work in, like, offensive side, and some people work in the blue side. but we still talk, and I had a really amazing mentor who really helped us learn what to do and how to focus and what, like, how we should approach this field. And from there on, it was just pretty much working as hard as possible, doing as many boxes on triathlon and hackathons, just doing as many CTs as possible, just trying to build my skill set, but at the same time, promote that on LinkedIn. And this is where I felt like my background in music and self-promotion definitely helped, because I just decided to apply that background onto LinkedIn. So it was like, I just considered LinkedIn another social media platform where everybody posts what they're up to, what they're doing, and trying to connect and network. So I just use that and just try to build myself up, post as much as possible. And from there on, I was really able to, I guess, kind of make a name of myself. And I was able to build a following and connections and people that I can really consider friends. And then from there on, I started my journey in working in different companies. I started as a cybersecurity test engineer, and I was able to fortunately get a chance to work in penetration testing. And then from there on, pretty much just doing red teaming and then penetration testing. And right now I ended up as being a traction operator. So it's been a journey, I would say.
Yeah, very, very cool story. It's interesting, the music background, and very interesting that you switched to this. So for the folks out there, because, you know, a lot of times there's confusion between pen testing and red teaming, if you could explain the difference between the two.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know a couple of people told me about this. Like, it's so pen testing, I would say, like, the general term is like a wide, very shallow type of field, while red teaming is a very narrow but very deep type of field. Where pen testing, I would say, like, you throw pretty much whatever you can at a system. Whatever sticks, you decide to investigate a little bit more and try to find what's out there, or what I have, maybe there's default credentials. Maybe there's, like, someone who left specific, like, you know, credits on the system, or like, maybe someone is overprivileged type of stuff. Stuff that you can find. Red teaming and red team operating, like, where I've been able to hit it into, is more of a field where you try to, I guess, investigate in a more deeper fashion. So you try to find stuff, like find maybe in some ways like default credentials, maybe auto-logging credentials, but at the same time, you have to try to be as quiet as possible. So in some ways, you're emulating an APT or trying to back like a hacker in some ways, but say more realistically compared to a penetration tester where it is a red team field, but in the same way, but also it's a field that you don't really care about whether or not you're quiet. But also, I've dealt with different teams where they're like, the pen test and the red team field becomes a little mushed up. And I know some teams, some pen test teams, they work very tightly with their blue team to make sure that, to see whatever, like, what is, like, you know, being, like, noticed by the blue team, by incident responders, and what they can see based on the attack on red, what, like, penetration testers do. So it is definitely, I know a lot of people throw the terms red teaming and penetration tester at the same time, but there is definitely a difference if you go more deeper into it. But that is, I guess, my type of experience in this.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, because it's interesting how many, you know, because you mentioned about going undetected on red teaming, but it's interesting because I've done some pen tests in the past that were maybe the first portion of the test, they want you to try to go undetected to see how long it takes. But yeah, it's interesting that it's good to hear your perspective and your kind of expertise with it, because there's been a lot of confusion of thinking it's all the same thing, you know, getting generalized like blue team. And when you really look at blue team, they're not all doing the same thing either. But so I think offensive security is a more better generic term.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. I felt like you're trying to basically encompass like the red team, pen testing, and the blue team. I would say pen testing, red teaming, offensive security, blue teaming, SOS, like incident response, defensive security. is it all the same.
Yeah. So what, from your perspective, how was it learning to do red teaming compared to pen testing? Was one any more difficult for you than the other?
I can tell you that I'm still learning a lot. Okay. Pen testing, like overall, when I started pen testing, I felt like it was definitely a lot more easier to get into pen testing because, like, at a certain point, like, once you know the methodology and you know the right tools, like, it is a lot more easier to apply that because, like, you're not really, you don't have the limitation of trying to get by as possible. So, like, it is, like, really difficult because there's some teams, they mixed it up, some teams, they separate it. And for, like I said, for red teaming, I actually like red team, like working as a red team operator, I'm still learning a lot, but it is, I would say, like there's a very specific type of methodology you have to follow. And there are very specific tools that you have to use to understand how to use to get into a system. And also you have to be very careful about cleaning up after yourself, whatever tools you use, just to make sure that there's no traps left. And I know for pen testing too, usually when you do a pen test, you make sure that you get rid of all the tools and whatever you've been using there, you get rid of it. But I felt like red teaming was a little more anal about that.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because you hear some cases, and that's a nice thing about some C2s. Some C2s, you can actually put an expiration date on the beacons, because I was listening to a podcast a while back, Black Hills Information Security Group, and they were talking about doing a pen test in there that they went in after someone had done some engagement years before that they were able to get access to a beacon that was left running on the C2. So they're able to get access that way. So back to that point about cleaning up, that is very important. It's nice when you have some kind of guardrails or some kind of mechanism to limit the time on your C2. That way you're just not leaving it open, because in a lot of cases it's just like, for instance, leaving user accounts and I really agree that cleanup is very important.
I don't think you'd be surprised by the amount of things that people leave behind and don't really clean.
And along that, it's interesting too. I don't know if you've ever experienced this. I've heard a few people that have experienced this that were on pen tests and they've actually found indicators of compromise, that there was actually someone actually still in the network, a threat actor that gained access to the network and were actually on there while they were performing the pen test.
Oh, that's amazing. I wouldn't say amazing. I want to be careful when I say that. I'll be amazing for people who found it, not amazing for the company who's dealing with it.
Yeah. Yes. And it goes to show too, people, in a lot of cases, you know, you hear these companies that are breached by nation states and they're in there for years and they don't realize it. So.
Yeah, it is. I would definitely say it's been a very interesting experience to see like the different types of like misconfigurations or like, you know, stuff that people leave behind. But like, you know, I think it's normal, not normal. It's not a good thing. It's definitely not good. I guess I'm a good security posture to do like all these stuff there out there. But I felt like it's in some ways human nature for people to make mistakes. Can leave stuff open or leave stuff like, you know, lying around for other people to look at. But that's why I feel like having a proper methodology, not just the methodology of engaging like in a pen test, but also having a separate methodology after a pen test, just focus on cleaning up whatever you did, whatever extra users you need, or whatever persistent learning tools you use, whatever open source, because later on, when that will definitely cause confusion for future pen tests. So I definitely, it is a funny subject to talk about.
Yeah, and even other things to think about too. You know, if you exploit a system and you got access, sometimes you may have to disable a firewall to do things. So yeah, if you leave the firewall, you know, host-based firewall, like on a Windows system, if you leave that open, then you're just kind of leaving open, you know, for someone else that comes along.
that would be a nightmare if that was still. But yeah, I definitely had experiences where I was working in assessment and like, and we would start as a black box and try to see if people like if they need. But if sometimes like when we're losing time and like, and we need access, we need to at least finish the assessment, then we would ask like the blue team, could you like, you know, turn off the followers and just let them try to get in, or using this try to see what we could find. Like, it's like, it's another thing that I've learned, that like, it's Headless wise, I've learned that there is like a very strict time limit, and really depends on what system you're testing and whatever, like whatever our weave set up, like whatever, like I guess contract itself. But from what I've seen, like the longest distance that I've seen is like a month, and the shortest I've seen is like a week or two.
Yeah, it's just amazing the differences, because I've worked as a consultant and an internal resource, and it, like I worked for a bank once. We got a week to do the pen test, but as a consultant, I was used to only getting, we got a month at the bank, but as a consultant, most places I was at, we'd get like maybe a week to perform the pen test.
And it's being more deep into that. There is a lot of funny stories in life. I guess like not only funny, but like kind of like terrifying stories that I've had where like, and I would assume that you had the experience, especially as a consultant, where you would like try to, like, you know, when you try to start, before you start an assessment, you talk to the system owners or the system developers, just trying to get an idea of like, you know, what they want to test and what they're going through. That up to now, I've never met a system owner or a system designer or engineer who is happy with a pen test.
Yeah. Yeah, good analogy for that is like, that I've heard other security professionals use is, you know, people have a hard time hearing that their kid, that their baby's ugly. So
yeah,
they do take it personally sometimes, because you get, and you can, it's understandable that you think about, they put all this time and effort and they thought their system couldn't be hacked. They've applied all these patches and done what they thought were all these best practices, and you're able to get in. I mean, I was remember one time when my first consulting role, we were at a school district, independent school district up in the Northeast, and we were in there, and one of my coworkers is like my first on-site internal pen test, and he had got domain admin and all this, and they just really didn't believe that was happening. And so he sat there and showed them evidence. Yeah, see, I've got access. And so they, one of the admins ran out to go fix that, you know, right away. But yeah, sometimes people don't believe it. It's nice when you get the customers or the people you're working with that understand, but sometimes you can get a lot of pushback. So have you had much experience with that, where people really didn't believe you did it and you're really pushing back?
Yeah, I've definitely had experiences where I would try to work on a system, and they were like, oh, we don't want you to work on a system. So, okay, so we'll try to mirror your system and build our own, like, I guess, infrastructure where we can test something that's similar to you. And then we're like, okay, and now can we get some, like, documents, like, you know, on your course report and protocols and services, just like, you know, because I guess one of, like, the assessments I worked on, like, they were like, oh, we know that we're going to have, like, different vulnerabilities, but we don't care about that. All we want is the easiest, fastest, and cheapest way to mitigate it. So I was like, okay. So there's limitations to that. And so I was just trying to get as much documentation from them so I could actually start writing up and setting up the test procedure and everything. And I would have so much pushback. They would not send me stuff. Like, they would send me a document, like half document, half of the document. The other half is nowhere to be found, and I would have to hound them, like, oh, this message, like, please have the other half, and it'll take maybe a week or two just to get that document. It was like a puzzle. I would have to try to ask a little part by part, and then try to make a whole.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've definitely had a lot of pushback, but then there's also been times where, like, people were super, like, you know, super nice. They were super helpful, and they were like, oh yeah, we want our system to have a good security posture. We want our system to be really, like, hardened, properly hardened and everything. So I was like, oh, okay, yeah, like, I love it a lot. And I would like directly work with the system owner and system devs and engineers. And we would, like, in real time work on stuff together. And like, there's been, like, big experiences like that too.
That's good. So what are some things that maybe you've done going into somewhere? Because, you know, you've had this experience where people push back and they feel like it's them against us. Is there anything special you do when you're kind of, you know, doing the kickoff meetings and starting those pen tests? Are there any things that you like to do to kind of, you know, let them know you're on the same side?
No, absolutely. Like, I always like to make sure that they understand where I'm coming from. Like, I always start with saying, like, from my previous experience when I was doing testing, I would just try to tell them, like, oh, I'm not here to, like, punish you. I'm just here because I just want to help out and try to find the best solution moving forward. And whatever I find, like, I'm going to work with you guys. I will openly communicate with you guys and make sure that we solve this in the most diligent and efficient way. Because I know that you guys are spending a lot of money on this test. And I do not want to waste your time at the same time as the same. I would hope that you guys would not waste my time. So I try to lay everything at the table and try to be as honest as possible. And I said, like, there's some people who are very receptive to that, but there will always be people who will not be receptive to that, and they will be kind of a little like, oh, I don't know, like, yeah, you're still here to bash me type of mentality.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, some of the experiences sometimes where, you know, you almost feel like a lawyer defending your case whenever you go to do the debrief or the report readout where you said, this is what's wrong, and then, you know, they don't like that, and just trying to make sure you have, you know, a good enough proof to show that, yeah, this, we actually breached this, we exploited this, and we gained access to really prove it to them.
You know, I definitely had experiences where, like, where you were talking about your experience, I found an end-of-life system, and I was able to gain root, I guess, within less than 10 minutes. And, like, I was talking about this, and nobody believed me, so I had to make a video recording of the actual exploit on a command line. I was like, oh, this is where I start. Look at me, I'm going to exploit. I'm using a specific CVE, and I use that to gain access onto a dummy user, and then I progress, and look. So, like, I've had experiences where, like, videos, I feel like, are the best type of way to communicate stuff, especially if I have a chance to. It's like, I hadn't, but usually, when I write, when we have to write reports, it's not very visual. It's going to be more of like a paper or like a documentation where I will, like, we try to take screenshots, all of that, and we try to, like, just pretty much reference everything. But, like, I've had experiences where I was allowed to make a video and show them the video, and I feel like that was, like, the best way to communicate with a client.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept and really good because, you know, when screenshots, there could be a missing screenshot, but at least if you got the video, you've got all of it in there. So very interesting concept. So for anyone that wanted to get into offensive security, what would you recommend? I mean, based, you know, you start the way you did and you know, we all kind of learn from what we did and maybe find ways to adjust. So what would you recommend for people that are wanting to get started?
So, there's a lot of fields I could talk about this, but it's like the first to just start off, like, I could say I'm not a smart person. I'm not a genius, I'm not a smart person. I feel like a lot of people will understand the word where I say that the most important thing of working or trying to learn is gonna be work ethic. Like, it's maybe based on how much time you put on. Like, so I have friends who, like, I know some people just, they work hard at work, but after work, they don't really do much. And I always, my belief was always like, you can't be someone who is willing to put in time after work. And that's always been my mentality. Like, make sure that you try to put in time after work. Doesn't matter. It could be maybe watching a couple videos. It could be maybe watching, like, maybe just three ops. But, like, that was my main mentality of trying to approach learning and getting into this field. And for, like, material-wise, like, there's so much out there. Like, TryHackMe is definitely a good, an amazing resource to have. It's, I think it's, like, $14 a month, but there's free boxes, too. But the thing I liked about TryHackMe starting out is there is a lot of walkthroughs. So there's a lot of modules that they hold your hand. They show you what tools to use. They try to help you understand what they're doing step by step. And at the same time, you also get to follow through. So that's one of the things I liked about TryHackMe. And then eventually I pivoted into Hack the Box. Hack the Box there is definitely pros and cons where I feel like it's not beginner friendly. It is definitely more of a step where I feel like if you can start off with TriHackMe, and once you feel more comfortable going out and then I guess branching out for TriHackMe, then ActiveBox is definitely a good resource to have. But the most amazing thing about ActiveBox is their academy. Their academy, I feel like, is top notch. Like whenever I'm studying for certification, or even if I'm doing assessment or I'm preparing for assessment, if I feel like I'm lacking in a certain area, then I usually just go to the academy and just do research and just do some studying. But like the academy has so much to offer. It has so much really detailed and easy to follow information. So that's what I would definitely recommend to do, like ActiveBox and TriHackMe. Like those two, I feel like are amazing resources to have. And then from there on, it's like one of the most important things after having a skill set is, I feel like, certification. Experience comes with time. That's something that you can't really mess with time. Time will naturally progress. So from my mindset, I was thinking about what else can I do other than trying to build my skill set. And that was working on certifications. And for certifications, there is so many out there. There are so many new certifications coming out. And like LinkedIn is like, I feel like it's oversaturated with people like trying out different types of companies coming out with new certifications and everything. And I personally did a lot of research before I got into this field because I felt like the most important thing about getting certifications is the fact that it's not cheap. So if you don't have a company sponsoring it, you have no choice but to use your own money, where I just basically use my own money to get certifications. So in order to make sure that you're not making a bad investment in certifications, it is very important to do research on different types of job postings. And I think I applied to a couple thousand when they first started. And when I was looking at the job postings, I would always see specific type of certifications again and again and again. And at a certain point, I feel like you can understand that, oh, okay, I think I know which certifications I have to go for. But at the same time, I have to make sure that it really works out. Realistically, I can get those because, for example, let's say OSCP. Amazing cert to have, but it's not an entry-level cert. I feel like you need actual experience. You actually need real-time experience and at least a couple of years, or maybe like 1 to 2 years where you actually understand what you're doing. So there are certain certifications that you should work on, and I feel like those are something that you should definitely do research on. But I could go on about this. I guess for me, this is one of the most important things I feel like getting into this space is having an understanding of exactly how to approach this. It's not like you should never approach a field with like, oh, I'm gonna do my best and I'm so happy. It's important to have a plan of action. And I feel like from there on you can build on that plan of action. Oh, sorry, I've been all
That's
around,
okay.
I'll keep rambling on nonstop.
That's okay. That's great advice. And I love that you mentioned the OSCP is not an entry-level cert, because that's a lot of the confusion. Because I went through the OSCP back from 2012 to 2013. I'd got my consulting job. I'd run vulnerability scanners, worked in AppSec for a while, and I didn't know how to hack. So I signed up for the OSCP. And it took me like, I went through, studied for a year for the cert, and honestly, it was pretty difficult because even though I had some security experience running some vulnerability scanners, I just didn't have the hacking skills, and we didn't have some of the resources to practice the hacking on back then. OSCP had the boxes within the lab and stuff to practice on, but as you mentioned, it's not an entry level cert, and I think there's a lot of confusion. And OSCP sometimes gets a bad rap because people complain about being too difficult and all this. And it's, when it was created, it wasn't, the thing that's changed between when I went through it and now is back then only IT and security people knew about the OSCP. There's a lot of people that know about it now that aren't in IT or security, and they're just starting out. Not to discourage anyone from doing it, but as you were mentioning, doing TriHackMe to hack the box, actually gain some experience and understand what you're doing before you dive into something like that.
Yeah, it's It is difficult to like, because like everybody, I would definitely assume that everybody has different skill set. Everybody learns different. Like you can't really focus one type of mentality in a person. Everybody has a different background and a different set of skills. And just I feel like if everybody does their due diligence to try to research to understand what certs actually help, it's a lot, it'll be more easier to navigate this field. Like OSCP, I feel like ultimately it's a good cert to have. And I definitely think a lot of companies will assume or like they have this mindset where they want pen testers or engineers to have OSCP. That should be an eventual goal. But I think that should deter people from trying to go for other certs. It's like, for example, like Heath Adams, TCM Security, PMPT, PGWT. I felt like those are really good, realistic type of certs. And like even CPTS, like HackMD, because I heard it's really difficult. But I like the academy, like the specific material that was used to prepare for that, it's amazing. Like you can actually learn a lot. And even if you fail getting a cert, definitely do not let that deter you because everybody fails. Like it's not the end. Like it's you always have a chance to get back up and try it again. But I understand that like, nobody wants to fail. Everybody, I've heard of people failing the OSCP like 5, 6 times and then eventually getting it. And like kudos to them. Like it's I feel like it'll be definitely very mentally, emotionally like debilitating sometimes to fail something. It'll definitely feel like everything is falling down and you don't have the proper type of, I guess, practice or like, you know, the proper type of skill set. But I feel like everybody should never really like actually deter everybody to for at least trying because the most important thing is the fact that we're trying.
I agree. One of the things to keep in mind for people too is whatever you, wherever place you are, your state at that time doesn't dictate that you're not going to be a good pen tester. Because one of the experiences I like to draw from was before I got an ID and then security, I worked as a AutoCAD draftsman. So I went to school for AutoCAD, and it was interesting because when I went in, I was probably one of the worst people computer skills wise in the class, because this was like 93 to 94. So computers really hadn't caught on that much. I wasn't really using computers. This was my first exposure learning DOS, because back then you're still using DOS. I mean, Windows 3.3.1.1 was out or whatever. And so that was out, but there's a lot of DOS stuff that you had to learn. And I was totally, you know, just like I said, probably one of the worst in the class. But fast forward to once I got through that class, was working out in the field, I was able to pick up the new features, the new versions of AutoCAD quicker than my coworkers. And then I figured out how to get network printers to work on 90, Windows 95 when Windows 95 came out. I was able to figure out some of the network printing that some of the people that they had on staff for IT wasn't able to figure out. So I learned that I had more of a skill for this. But starting out, my computer skills were really bad, but I worked on it and I got a lot better. So I think really people have to remember too is wherever you're now, don't just think that's where you're going to be always. As you work on these things, you're going to get better.
No, absolutely. Like, if you have a passion, if you most importantly enjoy doing this, because without the passion, without really feeling like you enjoy this, like, it's not gonna last. Excuse me. It's like, if you have the passion and you have the dedication and you plan things out, you have a plan of action, I feel like anyone can succeed. It's definitely, everybody's gonna go through different phases. Everybody has their own journey where, like, sometimes it's like when you start out, like you feel like the worst. You feel like you know nothing and like I'm not gonna get better. But that's the thing that I've learned and that what I felt like for me was the most important was repetition. I keep repeating it, but even if I don't understand, I just try it again and again. And eventually, like, you know, did I get advice? I try to get more into it. And then it becomes second nature. And then you understand, like, oh, okay, I think I'm getting better at this. And then you get opportunities to help other people out, like, you know, and then you explain to them. And I feel like that kind of definitely helps you, like, explain to people, about a specific type of technique or something. And then, because in order to really explain something and help people, other people understand, you have to really have a good understanding of that.
Yeah, that's a very good point, because like they say, the best way to learn is through teaching. So if you're, you know, getting a certain thing and you repeat it or whatever, you got your notes, but until you teach it, yeah, it's the teaching really does help. And so I do like the fact that you're giving back to others and stuff. And that's awesome. We need more people like that. So we're coming down towards the end of the episode. Is there anything you'd like to share that we didn't cover?
Oh, absolutely. I always wanted to say this, is that if I can do it, anyone can do it. Like this, if you have the passion, if you have dedication, like never give up, because like everybody has a different starting point, I feel like. So for some people, they'll catch up really fast and like they'll be whizzes right away. But at the same time, like enjoy your own journey, because like do we only go through this once? And like there'll be times when you look back fondly and like, oh, I used to not be able to do this, but now I can do this really easily. And it is a very fascinating type of feeling to have that, like look back and just see your own growth. Because if you can't enjoy that, then why are we doing this? Like, we're just doing this to get better and to enjoy what we do. And whoever is listening to this, and whoever is listening to what I'm saying, what Philip is saying, I feel like just keep going through, like, and just always ask questions. Never stop being like curious, never stop asking questions, like bug people. Like I used to bug so many people, and I know I annoyed a lot of people, and people were not happy with me. But I eventually learned a lot through that. And we are the best resources out there. People are the best resources that we can help each other. And as I said, like if I can do it, I can do it.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. That's some sage advice, some great words of wisdom there. Because yeah, that's one of the things too that I love about stories like yours and sharing more stories, is just the fact to let people know it can be done. Because that's whenever I do my talks, I share like anything it's career path related. I'll share how my first attempt at a career was professional wrestling. And so I share that to show that, you know, people think the big dumb guy, you know, people lifting weights and stuff. And it's like, I thought that of myself. I didn't think I would do anything with my mind for a living. I thought it would always be physical. And then, you know, I found out differently, you know, AutoCAD, IT, and then security and pen testing. So yeah, it's good. People need that motivation. And so it's good to have stories like yours to share.
I appreciate it. I appreciate this experience. Like, so I'm continuing to talk about it. It's like, I know it's like, I would say like, even my story, I wouldn't say my story is that intriguing. I would say like, because I know I've talked to people who had like really amazing stories of the amazing backgrounds, where like they were doing like a totally different field, and then they're able to pivot into this, and like they're amazing. Like, and it is an amazing field to be in, and I feel like anybody is in this field, I feel like you're definitely in a very good situation. You're in a very good position to succeed and learn. And I really hope that everyone can, like, if any have any questions, definitely reach out to me or Philip, and we're always on help out.
And we'll be sharing in the show notes Michael's social media, so you'll be able to reach out to him. And so, yeah, thanks, Michael, for joining. It's been a pleasure to have you on, and really enjoyed getting to learn more about your story. I mean, I've seen you on LinkedIn, but really didn't know that much about you, so it was really great to learn about your story.
No, absolutely. I'm very thankful for this opportunity, and I really hope we can talk more too. And it's like I said, it is nice to finally virtually meet you, and I hope we can have more conversations in the future too.
Same, yeah, definitely. So thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to The Philip Wiley Show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, to learn more about Philip, go to thehackermaker.com and connect with him on LinkedIn and Twitter @PhilipWiley. Until next time.